The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
And it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents... Normal Show Live! Marijuana Nation! Now, here's your host... Normal's outreach coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, tokers and tokettes. Welcome. It is Tuesday, July 19th, 2011, and that's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us for our show today. It's going to be an interesting one because I am flying solo here in the studio. We got no Ganja John. We got no Wiz Khalifa. Although Khalifa's on his way, Ganja John is recovering from an overdose of hard drugs. Otherwise known as alcohol. That's right. He had his birthday last night and a little bit hungover this morning. So that can kind of show you the lesson you need to learn from those terrible, terrible legal hard drugs. But we can welcome to our studio from beautiful Grastoria, Oregon, the lovely Cannabis Carrie. How you doing, Carrie?
I'm doing great. No one say hey over the phone.
All right. Yeah, John had his birthday yesterday, so it's just you and me, Carrie.
Well, you know, we've been down this road before. We'll be fine.
We'll be just fine. Carrie brings us our hemp headlines right after the first break. So, Carrie, what's in the news today?
Well, I've got some news about a new study that researchers are trying desperately to push forward that deal with cannabis and combat stress. Also, we're going to talk about the heat wave in the Midwest. Doesn't seem like it's doing so well for those outdoor plants. The Americans for Safe Access has filed a complaint against an anti-marijuana group. And probably one of my favorite stories of the whole week is cropping up today. Some former artists who have changed their ways. I'll tell you all about that coming up on the Hemp Headlines.
All right. Looking forward to that right after this first break. And, of course, today is your Electric Tuesday. So we'll be getting some great Electric Tuesday music on today from Cannabis Cure UK. And then at half past the hour, I'm going to bring you an extended version of a Cultivator's Corner, but not with Danny Danko. This is actually with Nico Escondido, another cultivation editor at High Times Magazine. And it's his presentation on light and indoor growing at the Medical Cannabis Cup in San Francisco. It was an amazing presentation. And any of you grow people out there, any of you growers out there that want to learn everything about spectrum and the different types of lighting available, this will be the seminar to listen to. Then in hour two, we've got some videos of activism going on in Seaside, Oregon, a new video from the Symphony of Science people, and some videos from Normal TV. All that and more is coming up on today's Normal Show Live. We are the voice of the marijuana nation, and please stay tuned and check out our blog at stash.normal.org and Carrie's blog at cannabisfantastic.com for all the latest news. We're right back after this.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
In today's busy world, we're inundated by advertising for all types of pharmaceuticals that come with a laundry list of potential side effects. Shouldn't you have better medical choices? Natural alternatives to pills pushed by Big Pharma? At Alternative Medical Choices, you could choose natural, safe, and effective alternative therapies that are right for your budget without nasty side effects. Cannabis, or marijuana, has been a legal medicine in the Pacific Northwest since 1998. Our doctors will help determine your qualifications for a medical marijuana recommendation in Oregon, no matter where you live. Our massage therapists will ease your aches and stress with soothing hemp seed oil or cannabis-infused massage salves. We also offer acupuncture, Reiki, and other alternative health therapies. Call Alternative Medical Choices in Portland, Oregon at 503-288-5579 or visit our website at www.altmedchoices.com. We specialize in out-of-state recommendations. That's www.altmedchoices.com or call 503-288-5579.
Did you know there are more Tokers than Texans? Hi, I'm Radical Russ Belville, host of Normal Show Live. It's true, there are more adults who will consume cannabis in America this year than the population of Texas. This and thousands of other statistics and polls are part of my new book, Normal's Big Book of Marijuana Facts, including 19 full-color poster-sized infographics of cannabis data.
A entirely legitimate topic for debate.
If we're going to have that debate, we need the facts. But Normal's Big Book of Marijuana Facts isn't just some listing of statistics and tables. It's truly a big book, a huge weatherproof binder that becomes its own 12 by 18 presentation easel. The colorful charts are jam-packed with facts that draw interest, and the explanatory text is all rigorously researched from reputable sources. You can make the case against prohibition with the government's own numbers. You can learn more about Normal's Big Book of Marijuana Facts by visiting stash.normal.org/bigbook. Pre-orders are available, and shipping begins September 1st, 2011. That's stash.normal.org/bigbook.
Cannabinoids and health.
Cannabinoids.
Why am I having trouble saying that?
Cannabinoids.
Jeez.
Cannabinoids.
What a gift. Play more if you can. You're looking for that dope weed. Fire it up. Play more if you can. You're looking for that dope weed. Pony boy's a man. Play more if you can. You're looking for that dope weed. Flame on. Here's a lighter. If you burn. Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carrie.
For many years now, medical cannabis activists have been touting the therapeutic benefits of marijuana to ease combat stress of returning soldiers. Since Vietnam, there has been a mountain of anecdotal evidence to suggest that using cannabis relieves the psychological wounds of battle. But now researchers are seeking federal approval for what is believed to be the first study to specifically look into the effects of marijuana on veterans with chronic post-traumatic stress disorder. A researcher at the University of Arizona's College of Medicine, along with the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies in Santa Cruz, California, have proposed a study that would examine 50 combat veterans who suffer from PTSD and have not responded to any traditional treatments. Rick Doblin, the executive founder of the Psychedelic Studies Group, told media outlets yesterday that our veterans from wars in Iraq and Afghanistan have been put in harm's way for the benefit of our country, and it is now our moral obligation to try and help them. In April, the Food and Drug Administration said that they were satisfied with the safety concerns over the study, that they had all been addressed by the proposing researchers, but they did want to know where the marijuana that they would use for the study would come from. And now they are waiting on a scientific review panel from the Department of Health and Human Services, which includes representatives from an assortment of federal health agencies. If they approve, the researchers will most likely get their marijuana from the government's own garden at the University of Mississippi under a contract with the National Institute on Drug Abuse. It is the only marijuana that can be permitted to be used in a federally approved study. An institutional review board must also approve the study along with the DEA. This last step might prove difficult for the researchers since it is far more challenging to get authorization for a study that examines the benefits of an illegal substance than to get approval to study the risks. But with drugs like Paxil and Zoloft, the most common treatment that has proved inadequate to offer relief for PTSD, researchers feel that the scientific study of new treatments should supersede politics. Out of 16 states in the District of Columbia that recognize the medical use of marijuana, only New Mexico and Delaware list PTSD as a qualifying condition for treatment. In New Mexico alone, almost a third of the 4,982 patients that use marijuana for medical reasons suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder. It is unclear how many of those are veterans. If the study is approved, veterans who participate would be observed on an outpatient basis over 3 months, both while they use marijuana and while they would not be permitted to do so. Half of those studied would use a vaporizer, and the other half would smoke the cannabis. We wish them luck on this desperately needed research.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me that they're worried about, you know, whether or not this is going to be safe to study for these people, these veterans who've served our country so honorably, to treat their post-traumatic stress disorder. And we've known long about this, that it really, really helps. But yeah, they're worried about studying the safety of this. Well, let's take a look at some of the stuff that they are prescribing our veterans right now for their PTSD. One of those that she mentioned was Paxil, right? Well, here's some of the common side effects for Paxil. Anxiety, blurred vision, constipation, decreased sexual desire or ability, diarrhea, dizziness, drowsiness, dry mouth, gas, increased sweating, increased urination, loss of appetite, nausea, nervousness, numbness or tingling of the skin, stomach upset, trouble concentrating, trouble sleeping, weakness, and yawning. Those are the common side effects for Paxil. Some of the severe but rare side effects can include severe allergic reactions, rash, hives, itching, difficulty breathing, tightness in the chest, swelling of the mouth, face, lips, or tongue, bizarre behavior, black or bloody stools, chest pain, confusion, decreased concentration, decreased coordination, exaggerated reflex, fainting, fast or irregular heartbeat, fever, chills, or sore throat, hallucinations, memory loss, new or worsening agitation, panic attacks, aggressiveness, impulsiveness, irritability, hostility, exaggerated feeling of well-being, restlessness or inability to sit still, persistent or severe ringing in the ears, persistent painful erection, red, swollen, blistered, or peeling skin, seizures, severe or persistent anxiety or trouble sleeping, severe or persistent headache or dizziness, significant weight loss, stomach pain, suicidal thoughts or attempts, tremor, unusual bone pain or unexplained swelling, tenderness or bruising, unusual bruising or bleeding, unusual or severe mental or mood changes, unusual weakness, vision changes, worsening of depression. And the final note, this is not a complete list of all the side effects that may occur. Yeah, that's Paxil. That's what we're giving our soldiers right now to deal with their post-traumatic stress disorder. And we're worried about whether or not cannabis is going to be safe for them when the most significant side effects that we reach from cannabis are dry mouth, red eyes, and appreciation of jazz.
A pro-cannabis group in Southern California has filed complaints against an anti-cannabis group. The San Diego chapter of Americans for Safe Access has turned in a 70-page document to the Fair Political Practices Commission, the District Attorney Bonnie Dumanis Integrity Unit, and the San Diego Ethics Commission that allege numerous violations by Scott Chipman, William Lowe, and other principal members of a group calling themselves Citizens Against Legalizing Marijuana. The complaints include a failure of the organization to disclose payments for mass campaign literature and also failure to register as lobbyists. Citizens Against Legalizing Marijuana, or CALM, was founded in 2010 by Chipman and Lowe for the purpose of defeating Proposition 19 in California, the initiative that would have legalized marijuana for all adults in the state. Another group that is named in the complaint is Safe Beaches for San Diego, a group that is not only against marijuana decriminalization, but also campaigned and won a measure to ban alcohol from all San Diego beaches 3 years ago. Scott Chipman is also involved with the Safe Beaches group. Safe Beaches is now being transformed into Safe Neighborhoods, a group dedicated to ban dispensaries of marijuana for medical purposes in the area. Eugene Davidovich, the chair of the San Diego chapter of Americans for Safe Access, says that Mr. Chipman has a lengthy and significant history in San Diego politics, throughout which he has failed to disclose campaign activities and appears to have created an illegal political slush fund. The ACA has brought the complaints regarding illegal use of the funds, as San Diegans for Safe Neighborhoods and Chipman individually have begun backing the mayoral campaign of Bonnie Dumanis. Chipman also donated money to other anti-marijuana candidates, according to the group. We will keep you posted on any developments in this interesting case from San Diego.
Well, this is hardly a surprise, because for the drug warriors, the ends justify any means in these guys' case. They don't care too much about whether or not they're breaking campaign finance rules, because in their mind, they're doing the right thing. It's all about the children. They're saving the neighborhoods. Meanwhile, if we try to form these nonprofits and we fudge just a tiny little bit on any single number, you can bet the federal and the state governments come right down on us as marijuana legalizers. So kudos to Americans for Safe Access for suing these guys and forcing them to have to play by the same rules we have to play by.
And a current heat wave in the Midwest is taking its toll on outdoor marijuana crops. The Oklahoma Bureau of Narcotics is reporting that the plants they are finding outside are dying, dead, or in very bad shape. Mark Woodward of the Oklahoma Bureau of Narcotics says that the heat wave has actually helped them nab pot farmers and not just the farms this year. He says traditionally, clandestine outdoor crops are only visited once a week or two, but for the plants to survive this heat wave, gardeners must visit their crops daily, and that increases the chances of catching them in the act. According to Officer Woodward, an outdoor plant in Oklahoma State is valued at about $1,500. He didn't say if that was the value of a healthy plant or the dead ones that he's been finding. Good luck to all our Midwestern farmers.
Well, the sad story, of course, of this Midwestern heat wave is the people that it threatens, not the plant that it threatens. I mean, there are people, seriously, heat waves, you know, extreme temperatures, extreme hot temperatures, kill more people than any other weather phenomenon in the world, right? So this is serious stuff. People die from this stuff. So if you're in the Midwest and you've got a neighbor or someone that you know is elderly or needs some help and you can help them out, please do your part. This is one way as cannabis consumers we can reach out to the community and show folks that we're interested in more than just getting high. So as a cannabis consumer, reach out and donate and help people. If you've got an elderly neighbor nearby, stop by and check them out. Make sure that they're okay. And don't forget about your pets either. You know, your pets are going to need more water. You're going to need to watch them a little bit closer as well. As for the outdoor plants, this is, of course, a sad situation that we're going to be losing some of the crops out there, especially in places like Oklahoma where the weed is kind of hard to come by. So it's a shame about this heat wave. But again, I'm more worried about the people and the pets than I am about the plants.
Years ago, I saw a 60-minute piece on young teen music artists that were also part of a neo-Nazi family. The beautiful young blonde twins named Lynx and Lamb Gaday sang and wrote songs praising Hitler, Rudolf Hess, and white supremacy. They were selling records and they were very popular within the movement and seemed pretty confident in their opinions about the white race in interviews on TV. They called themselves Prussian Blue, and you can find many of their videos still online today. But now the girls are all grown up and out from under their white supremacist manager mother. They now credit marijuana with helping change their views on diversity and human nature. The changes began on a European tour in 2006 where they played with other neo-Nazi musical acts. The girls did a rendition of Bob Dylan's Knockin' on Heaven's Door, a song that they had heard and loved. The mostly skinhead audience began booing, and their mother told them to never play the song again because Bob Dylan is Jewish. At the end of that tour, the girls made the decision to stop being Prussian Blue. The stress of being the Nazi movement's sweethearts, along with all the media interviews worldwide, took its toll on the now teenage girls. Lynx had a bout with cancer in her freshman year in high school and developed a rare condition called CVS, or cyclic vomiting syndrome, and Lamb also suffers from severe emotional stress over her childhood as well as scoliosis that leaves her with debilitating back pain. But now they want the world to know that they've moved on. In trying to find a cure to their ills, they tried an array of alternative medical treatments, but eventually found medical marijuana. The twins claim that it has saved Lynx's life, and they have now become advocates for legalizing marijuana for everyone in America. They claim that smoking marijuana for them reawakened their creative impulses that was once devoted to writing music about hate. The former Prussian Blue singers now openly question their mom's fixation on the fate of the white race, as well as her encouragement of their bizarre young musical career. Lynx says that it was difficult for them to handle being frontmen for a belief system that they didn't even completely understand at the time since they were just little kids. They have been silent about their transition until now, fearing retribution from their former fans. Their popularity has even spawned a satirical musical about their lives, set for Broadway to debut later this year. The new cannabis activists say they are not white nationalists anymore, that they are liberal in their beliefs, that they love diversity, and that the many different cultures in our country is amazing and makes them proud of humanity. Now, we know that cannabis can relieve many medical symptoms, but curing hate would make it one of the most useful substances known to man. That, Russ, is my favorite story of the week.
Yeah, we did a little bit on this yesterday in hour two as well, and I agree. This is a fantastic story. I don't know about, you know, did cannabis cure their hate? I don't know, but now that I think about it, coming from Idaho and knowing a few people, not personally like friends or anything, but knowing of people who were of that, you know, white nationalist persuasion, skinhead persuasion, I can't think of a single stoner amongst any of them. And it leads me to wonder, is cannabis somehow an anti-racism drug? I mean, can you be a racist and still use pot? If you know of somebody who is a severe racist, who's a pot smoker, let me know, because I can't think of one. Now, I'm sure it's possible. I'm sure there's got to be someone out there. But as a personal aside, I really can't think of it. It seems to me that's more a meth thing or more an alcohol thing and not a weed thing. I've always said that marijuana brings us all closer and helps us understand how we're all connected, understands how we're connected to the earth, to nature, and to one another. Not to get too spiritual woo-woo on you or anything like that, but I really do think there is something about these kind of substances, not just cannabis, but also the psychedelic mushrooms to some extent, that would lead someone to greater insights, greater empathy, and a greater understanding that, you know what, we're all in this together.
About that time, huh?
Hey, Coleco, Wiz Coleco's here, and we are going to take ourselves a little bit of break. And Ganja John, get well soon. We'll see you tomorrow. Be right.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? Reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
As High Times Senior Cultivation Editor, I'm often called into the field and asked to sample or even identify exotic strains of marijuana in their natural habitat. Now, for the first time, I've compiled more than 120 of my favorite strains into this single field guide designed to fit into your pocket as you travel the world in search of your favorite plant. From a friend's closet grow room to the wilds of Northern California, this single guide covers all of today's best-known strains, plus heirlooms and throwbacks, including High Times quality photos and information on each variety's genetic heritage and growing characteristics, plus my personal notes on aroma, flavor, and potency. So this is Danny Danko, author of the official High Times Field Guide to Marijuana Strains, wishing you good times and great ganja.
The official High Times Field Guide to Marijuana Strains is available at hightimes.com and finer bookstores.
Hey, this is Subcool, coming to you live from the second annual Medical Cannabis Cup in San Francisco, and I'm on Normal Radio.
Normal Show Live reminds you to never smoke and drive impaired. Hang out for a while and share.
All my friends, I'm the low rider.
This is Normal Show Live.
The low rider is a little higher.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today we bring you Tunes for Electric Tuesday, our segment featuring the best of modern electric music in the genres of dance, new age, house, and experimental. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's daily Toker Tunes.
All right, folks, on Electric Tuesday, every now and then, we get a little bit of a dose of science from the folks out at symphonyofscience.com. We found this, of course, because of the Carl Sagan glorious mind? I forget the name of the song. But anyway, the Symphony of Science song that we play all the time, and that kind of turned us on to this website. And so there's a new tune out from the Symphony of Science people, and it's called Children of Africa, and I have not heard it yet, but I'm really looking forward to hearing it. So we will pull this up on the old video window. It'll be a video presentation as well. So I hope you enjoy that. Once I get this centered, here we go. It's the story of us, Symphony of Science, the Children of Africa.
Man is a singular creature. He has a set of gifts which make him unique among the animals.
so that, unlike them, he is not a figure in the landscape. He is the shape of the landscape.
We are all children of Africa. Children of Africa. They say this is where it all began. This is where it all began.
In a parched African landscape, man first put his foot to the ground, to the ground, to the ground, to the ground, to the ground.
Africa was our only home for tens of thousands of years, until a small handful of people made their way out of Africa.
These beings with soaring imagination, eventually flung themselves and their machines into interplanetary space. These beings with soaring imagination, eventually flung themselves and their machines into interplanetary space.
We are all children of Africa. Children of Africa. This landscape has been home to humans 200,000 years.
We have come so far. All of this is cause for great celebration. We have come so far. This is a story about us.
Those early Europeans.
These beings with soaring imagination, eventually flung themselves and their machines into interplanetary space.
We are not the only beings, with personalities, minds and feelings, Chimpanzees have very clear personalities, minds and feelings.
Take a chimp brain fetally and let it go two or three more rounds of division. Out comes symphonies and ideology.
We are not the only beings.
Everything that we are that distinguishes us from chimps emerges from that 1% difference in DNA.
Through the ice age.
These beings with soaring imagination, eventually flung themselves and their machines into interplanetary space. These beings with soaring imagination, eventually flung themselves and their machines into interplanetary space.
Using his burgeoning intelligence, this most successful of all mammals has exploited the environment to produce food for an ever-increasing population. Instead of controlling the environment for the benefit of the population, perhaps it's time we control the population to allow the survival of the environment.
You want a copy of that song for your iPod? Check out the Daily Toker Tunes at the Stash blog by surfing to stash.normal.org and choosing Media and then Toker Tunes from the main menu.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
There is a peaceful solution called a peace revolution. And now let's take back America.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Like millions of freedom-loving Americans, I'm a marijuana smoker, and I don't think that that should be any of the government's business. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana. The next time you light up, take the time to let your elected officials know how you feel. It's time we legalize marijuana and stop treating marijuana smokers like criminals. For more information on how you can help legalize marijuana, please contact Normal at NORML.org.
contrary. How does her garden grow? Don't ask me. I'm just the voiceover guy. Ask High Times Senior Cultivation Editor Danny Danko in our Normal Show Live's Cultivator's Corner.
I know some of you out there that are regular listeners are going, what? Wait, whoa, Danny Danko? Is this Friday? What the hell's going on? No, no, no. It's not Friday, and Danny Danko is not here. But we are going to do a special Cultivator's Corner. We're going to spend the next half hour with a great presentation from Nico Escondido from High Times Magazine. He presented this at the 2011 Medical Cannabis Cup in San Francisco. And for those of you who wanted to get your questions answered on lighting and spectrum and all of those technical details for indoor growers, this is the presentation for you. We turn it over to Nico Escondido.
So like Mike was saying, my name is Nico. Sorry about this noise over here. I don't know if it's distracting. We're going to try to turn that down. What I like to do when I talk about grow, first of all, I like to talk a little bit about myself so you guys know who I am. I haven't been around that long, 5 years, like Mike said, but certainly you guys know Jorge and Ed Rosenthal and, of course, Danny Danko a little bit better than me. Just so you know, I'm not 12 years old, so I just turned 33. I've been growing cannabis for about almost 15 years now. My philosophy when I grew was always don't grow at home, so that way if I get busted, I could come home. So I always grew in places like Mexico, Canada, even Australia for a while. And I was young. I did stupid things. And what I realized the most when I think back to all those experiences was that it was a great experience, but I was just doing things to get by. Maybe I was growing for yield. Maybe I was just growing because I, you know, trying out new stuff and I wasn't really focused on quality. And when I came to High Times, a whole new world opened up to me, and that's in large part credit to you guys with Prop 215 and making the world realize, you know, that this is a medicinal plant. So what I started to do was I started to think about it from a scientific point of view. So when you think about it, cannabis cultivation is just pure plant science. It's plant biology. It's horticulture. And we know a lot about that. We've been doing that since the beginning of civilization. So I'm not going to stand here and try to tell you guys that I know everything or I'm an expert. I might know some things you don't. You guys certainly know things that I don't. But what I like to instill on people during these seminars is more about the approach, more about how we approach our cannabis cultivation these days and how we think about it, critical thinking and pragmatic thinking. So we're going to go, it's going to start off a little bit basic. This whole presentation is centered around light. So it pertains a little bit more to the indoor grower, but it still applies outdoors, obviously. And like I said, it'll be a little bit basic, but at the end we're going to get into some, you know, nitty-gritty scientific-y technological topics. And then at the end we'll have a Q&A, and that'll be that. So, like I was saying, we want to approach our plant and our gardens as if it's medicine, because that is what it is these days. So a lot of people like to ask me, like, well, what's most important when I grow, Nico? What do you think? Like H2O, media, atmosphere, CO2, light, nutrients. My answer always to that is light. You obviously have your gardens. Sometimes you go away, you don't feed or water those plants for 3 or 4 days, they're still going to live. You lose power and you don't have light for 4 or 5 days, your garden is in big trouble. So I kind of put an emphasis on that, and I started to think about light, and I've met some really cool people out here who have taught me a lot. I think some of them are in the audience. So I hope they enjoy this, and I hope I get it all right. Okay, so this is just the basics. What is light? We all know what it is. But what we want is to get as close to the sun's natural light as we can indoors. And after 30 years of indoor horticulture, we still haven't achieved this. We're actually nowhere even close. You all know we have different types of spectrums with different types of bulbs. You have metal halides, that's a bluer, whiter light, and we have our high-pressure sodiums that we flower in, and that's an orange, redder type of light. The sun's light is plasma light, and that's a type of light that we are just now on the forefront of developing. You've heard of plasma lights, and that's the type of light that's emitted. And even though it's not essential, obviously, we grow plants under our HID bulbs, that's where we're trying to get to. We're trying to mimic the sun because, after all, it's the light that's creating the reaction in photosynthesis that creates food for the plant. Plant does not eat that water or eat that nutrient alone. It processes it into a sugar, and that's through photosynthesis, and it's because of light. Incidentally, this is how this all came about, and I don't know if my friend is here, but when I came out here a few years ago, he said, you know, Nico, we all go in our grow rooms, and we're looking at our plants, and we're like, what's wrong with this? What's wrong with that? How can I change this? Maybe I should use this medium. Maybe I should use this nutrient. And we never look up. The lighting has been the same from the beginning, as I just said, but now there's new things on the market, and that's what we're going to get into at the end here. We got digital ballasts, digital bulbs. We have LED lights. So really, where is this all taking us? I'm going to go quick through this slide. This is just the this just highlights what I was saying. This is a basic equation for photosynthesis, and you see that the byproduct is one, glucose, the sugars, and two, I'm sorry, not a byproduct, but light in the equation is equal to photons. And that's the key point here. That is what the plant extracts from light during photosynthesis, is the photon. And that's what's used to create the process by which they get glucose, their sugar, for food. And that's going to be very important as we get a little bit deeper into spectrum and light quality. But first, here's a few more basics. You guys all know this kind of stuff. Light intensity. So we're trying to match the sun. The sun, it's, you know, we know it's super powerful. To get as much energy as we need from the lights is virtually impossible. We're never going to match that, really, like we do outdoors under the power of the sun. But you all remember from grade school the inverse square law, which basically says that the further you increase your distance from a source of light to a surface, that the light intensity decreases exponentially. Okay, so what does that mean? That means we want to keep our lights closer to the plants, and we want to try to make sure there's good penetration throughout the canopy. And if there's not, you want to take up maybe a third off of that bottom of the plant, because that's not going to produce anything. You're going to get little popcorn nugs that consume a lot of energy and don't redirect that energy to your bigger top colas. So keep your lights close to the plant. And here's a couple of ways people do this. Let's start with the far left. Most of you are probably more familiar. That's a more standard setup, just hooded lamps. But this grower, he has them on light movers. Now that's great because, like we're talking about, they're close to the plants and he's getting optimal penetration. What's really interesting here, I'd like to point out too, is you'll notice that he's using not just HPS but also metal halide lamps. You'll see the bluish purple or hue on this side and the yellow or orange or hue on this side. And they're moving, so it's not like just those segments are getting that kind of light. He's rotating them over the garden, and he's broadening the spectrum of light that his plants get. And we're going to get to why that's important in a minute. Here on the left is something maybe you guys have seen a little bit about. We've been putting it in High Times. It's a very ingenious solution to some of this that we're talking about. These spinner arms actually move at the rate of a ceiling fan. I think something like 30 to 40 RPM. Which is pretty quick. Not only does that keep the light bulb cool, so you don't have to worry about, you know, using lenses and air cooling your bulbs and all that kind of stuff, it keeps heat pockets from forming, but also you could get this to like within maybe 4 to 6 inches above your plant canopy, and you can interchange the type of bulbs you have. He's doing it as well, and you get a broader spectrum. Now this company here sparked a lot of this intellectual dialogue within my own head. This is what made me really start questioning what exactly it is that we're doing these days in terms of lighting. This was originally manufactured by LifeLight Technologies and SunPulse. The bulbs are SunPulse now, and the spinner system is just made by LifeLight. But the interesting thing was that these SunPulse bulbs were not like our traditional HID bulbs, meaning they didn't just come as a HPS or a metal halide. Instead, they came as a Kelvin-rated bulb, a temperature rating. And I believe there were, it was a 3K, 4.5K, 6K, a 10K, and even a UV bulb, which is awesome for the end of flowering. And so you could really interchange these bulbs during different parts of your garden's development and get the spectrum that's, you know, most needed for those stages of development. Now you might say, like, well, how fast could it actually spin to deliver all of those different qualities of light? Like, doesn't that mess the plant up? I was kind of confused. Like, because outside from the sun, it's just all coming down all at once. Well, that thing spins so fast, I believe that there was an algorithm, they said, created that spun it so that it delivered that light at the exact beat frequency that the sun delivers light on Earth. I'm not a mathematician like that, so I'm going to just take their word on that. But that's one of the new technologies that are out there. These are the ideas that people are trying to get out there and trying to create. But sometimes we get so bogged down in just what we've been doing and what we know that we don't always approach cannabis or medicine from possibly the best angles. So this just explains a little bit about spectrum and what we're going to get into next. Spectrum, also referred to as frequency or wavelengths, are measured in nanometers. You guys see that a lot. You see NM, and that's where it's referring to, spectrum. The leaf pigments absorb the photons that we were talking about that come out of light. Now, you see, this is another thing that I should have had a slide on, but I'll just talk about it. People are caught up on this idea of intensity and light with lumens. Lumens, honestly, doesn't really have a place in horticulture. Lumens is a measurement of light for the human eye. So when we talk about lumens, if you're lighting a stage or a concert or a show, yeah, it's applicable. But when you're talking about horticulture, it's not the right barometer for us to be measuring our light. Then we have PAR. You probably heard of PAR, photosynthetically active radiation. That's closer to what we're looking for because it's talking about the usable light that the plant uses. But the real essence is photons, okay? The photons is what it's all about. And if you really want to know how strong your lights are or if they're dying or if you need to change your bulbs, what you need to get is a photon meter. Not one of these things that you put under here and it tells you lumens and output. You can buy one of these. I don't think they're that expensive. You could probably find one for $150, $250 in there. And it literally clamps onto the leaf of the plant, and it tells you how many photons are striking that surface and what your rate of photosynthesis is. Okay? And that, we have that tool. Why aren't we using it? That is what this is all about. It's about getting these photons and a proper quality of light to your plant, mimicking the sun and making it as natural indoors as we can in the event that we can't grow outdoors. Okay. We're going to come back to this slide in a minute, because we're just rolling into spectrum here. Now, this is an old slide, and I'm not going to say anything bad. I'm going to try not to say anything bad about LEDs. Okay, because now LED systems are full spectrum, or they're not full spectrum. We don't have full spectrum, but they are fuller spectrum. They're not two-tone much anymore. But in the beginning, people would ask, like, guys, what's up with these LEDs? In the beginning, they were just red and blue, which told me right away that was wrong, okay? There was something just that doesn't make sense. Like, do you just eat, like, chicken and peas? Like, you're going to feed your plants just red and blue? I didn't get it. But the scientists, or I shouldn't say scientists, the manufacturers who come up with these LED systems would say, well, the plant really only needs red and blue spectrum. Red is the frequency that actually carries the most photons. Okay, awesome. Blue, obviously, keeps the internodes short, keeps your plants squatter, and those two frequencies are most efficiently processed by the plant, so we'll just give them red and blue. So, if it was true, it made sense. And I looked it up, and sure enough, it was half true. The red and the blue are absorbed more efficiently, and this will show you. But there's a little thing that we're overlooking. So right here, we're looking at the white curve is the absorption rate of your plant's leaves from the various spectral wavelengths. Your 400 nanometers are the blues, and at your far end, and your 700 are your reds. So you see in this area, in the blues, boom, 100%. Over in the reds, huge spike, boom, 100%. Shit, okay. Looks like the plants are processing that much more efficiently. Look how low it is down here. I mean, we know some of that's reflection, you know, and it doesn't absorb the green, right? But still. But then, when you take the actual solar spectrum, and that's what this is in nature, this is the amount of these frequencies that are actually found in nature from the sun. So what this actually is telling us is that when the sun shines down, the least amount of colors in that sunlight are the blues and the reds. So after talking to people, they were like, yeah, well, it does absorb them and process them more efficiently, but that is only because they have to, because it is least present in nature. It doesn't mean that they need those two colors more than the others, or only those two colors. It just means plants have evolved over millions of years, and they're more efficient at it because there's less of it. So I said, okay, yeah, that makes sense. But then I started wondering, well, what the hell happens if you don't give it full spectrum? What happens if, you know, because people grow under LEDs. I mean, it works. It's not bad, you know. And the yields were low at first, I heard. But people would say to get, oh, it's really resiny and it's really sticky and just a little bit more, you know, higher quality. And I would wonder if it was because the plant was a little stressed out. It's getting only like pink light at this point. And we all know when you freak your plants out a little bit, they think they're dying, and they do. They produce more resin. But you're losing yield. Your plants aren't truly healthy or happy. And we're moving further away now from nature. Like 15, 20 years ago, I remember there was a little plasma, tiny bulb on the cover of High Times. 20 years ago, where is that bulb? It never materialized because we're stuck in our ways. So the LEDs come out, and you think, well, how did the LEDs break out? Well, they're cheaper, you know, they're little diodes, and they have other benefits. I know they run cool, they don't use a lot of power, but we're not really getting back to the sun. We're not really getting back to nature. Okay, so that's it. I'm not going to go much deeper on LEDs because there's probably like 20 vendors out there that will kick my ass after the show anyway. So you all get the point, okay? We're looking for quality light. If we have to move them indoors, let's do it right. Let's keep moving forward and progressing the technology and using the science that we know. And let's get better product, better gear out there, and grow better medicine. So, a tangent to that. New technology, lighting, what's going on? You all know that, I don't know, a while ago now, maybe 5 years ago, the electronic digital ballots hit the market. Boom, awesome, everybody's on board. They're more efficient. They use less power, you lose less power. But all of a sudden, there was this huge spike in sales of bulbs. Philips, Sunmaster, all these companies selling twice as many bulbs. People were saying, yeah, I don't get it, I don't know, my bulb's just burning out a lot faster. Like, I did two cycles and they're like, fizzled out. Well, it turns out this is another case of industry in one place, technology in another, and trying to get both to work together and move along. Our HID bulbs, our HPS, our metal halide bulbs, they work on traditional core and coil ballasts, magnetic ballasts. Those ballasts run at 40, 50, 60 hertz, something like that, right? New electronic digital ballasts, 20,000 hertz. So you have a bulb running on 60 hertz, and then you run it on 20,000 hertz. Something's going to happen. What happens is it causes what they call acoustic resonance. That's in the arc tube, in the filament of your bulb. And instead of just, you know, making this little stream of light, it's going, you know, sporadic, and it shortens the lifespan of your bulb anywhere from 25 to, you know, 50%. So the next question is, well, what the fuck do we put in the electronic digital ballast? You put a digital bulb in digital ballast. Who makes digital bulbs? Anybody know who makes a digital bulb? Who? No. Someone said Digilux. Philips makes one. SunPulse makes one. Those are the only two that have them. Okay? And the thing is, SunPulse is the only one that is available to us that's in the United States and that runs on our frequency. For a long time, I'd come up here and I would give this presentation and I would talk about SunPulse and they're the only ones that have the digital bulbs, and everybody thinks that I work for SunPulse, and it kind of sounded bad. And I was just telling the truth. So I searched high and low, hoping to find another digital bulb so that I wouldn't just look like I didn't work for High Times anymore. And I found out that, yes, Philips, whoever said that was correct, has a digital bulb. Not only does Philips have a digital bulb, they've had a digital bulb for 7 fucking years. Like, what, all right? But it's for big agriculture, commercial-sized grilling, only runs on 400 volt. You know, it's just for gigantic, big greenhouses. I saw them in the north of Holland not too long ago. And they don't, Philips, you know, to a certain extent, those companies don't want to have a lot to do with our industry. So they weren't in any rush to give us, you know, these bulbs. However, a company did step in, I think they're called Gavita, and made a version that they said, well, we could run it now in North America. It runs on 220. And I said, well, we don't run on 220 in the United States, in Canada maybe. You guys could probably benefit from this out here, though, because you're medical, you have bigger grows, you do warehouse size setups and stuff, and you guys can easily get 220. So it is doable. You can get those bulbs. However, they only run on their ballast, whereas SunPulse will plug into pretty much any digital ballast, and they actually do certifications on the digital ballast. So that's something I just wanted to share with you guys. I actually backed it up, just in case you're wondering, like, if I know what I'm talking about. I decided to call Hortolux in Ohio, and I told them I was writing a college thesis, and I actually got on the phone with an engineer in their lab who was working on this, and I talked to her, and she's like, yeah, you know, none of our bulbs work on these ballasts. She's like, so we're recommending that, you know, people just keep using the magnetic traditional core and coil ballast. It just drives me crazy. Like, we're moving ahead, but no, let's take 2 steps backwards again. I just think we should keep progressing this. There's not much that we can do, you know, in a lab or something. We're just growers. We're just, you know, doing what we do. But we can do something when we get into the hydro shops. You know, we can ask for these things. We can talk to them about it. We can share this information with each other, and that's all I'm trying to do for you guys right now. You're the end user, so I hate to think people, you know, like I was 10 years ago, spending $200 on a bulb, like 10 bulbs every, you know, 3 months and shit. I mean, it's expensive. It's not good for the environment, and we can do better things for our gardens. So take it as you will. There's just a couple of tidbits there on light. And that's really it. If you guys have any questions, this is my email. I'm always accessible there. Hit me up anytime. Talk grow. And if you want to do a little Q&A real quick, I think we have like 5 or 10 minutes so we could do it. Any questions? How much are the spinner lights? I don't know. No. I think in the beginning they were a little pricey, like anything when they come out, but I'm pretty sure the prices come down now. But I honestly don't know what they retail for. You also have to think about, like, what your cost-benefit analysis and what you're saving. Like, also on the spinners, I like that because you're using digital bulbs. There's electronic ballast in those arms. So you're using, you know, you're not buying bulbs at the same rate any longer. What's that? I mean, they give you ratings on the box. They usually put it in terms of hours. You know what I mean? Some growers will just keep using them, you know, and some growers will change them every 2 cycles, every 3 cycles, something like that. You know, I use the photon meter, you know, and I see, yeah. The question is, has anybody ever actually brought sunlight indoors, like with mirrors or some funnel system or something? I've never seen that, no. That's an interesting idea. You know, it's along the lines of sunlights, maybe in warehouses, or along the lines of greenhouse growing, you know, where you can supplement, you know, during the day or during the night rather, with your HIDs. And I don't know that you'd be able to get enough light though to cover a garden. If it was a closet grow or something, I bet you could rig something like that. The quality of light should remain the same. I don't think it would diminish bouncing off mirrors. Crystals were refracting. I don't know.
Sorry to interrupt the Nico Escobedo seminar, but holy for best product, best food, and best last piece will be ending in 20 minutes, so please, if you have a vote, get over to the High Time Food to do so. Sorry to interrupt.
No worries. Question is, what price level do the plasma lights need to get to be competitive? I mean, in terms of the price level, I would think it needs to get down to, look at the HID market right now. People will pay, I'd say, probably 20% more for a new product that they know is better, but sometimes you see something that comes out marked up already 50-100% more, and I think, you know, sometimes that's what inhibits this technology from getting out. People are very worried all the time about, you know, they have this new technology, it's not cheap enough, but they can't get it out to the people cheap enough, but they do it anyway because they don't want their idea to get stolen, and then it flops, you know, and then if someone else doesn't pick up the ball and keep using that technology, you know, people just write it off like, oh, that failed. Well, maybe there's a whole other business side to these things that you have to, you know about to be successful with the technology as well. The plasma light that I saw in Holland at the Gavita workshop was a 330-watt plasma bulb. It was about an inch and a half. It was amazing. They ignite these things with radio waves, like microwaves, and they heat the element. It's plasma light, so it's closer to the sun. I think, though, they're still having problems getting it full spectrum. It's better. It would probably be like, you know, supplementing with fluoros with your HID setup or whatever. But I'm not sure on the price. And the other problem is, again, it only works in a certain ballast. You know what I mean? So, and that will be the case with that, you know, for who knows how long. No. I'm not saying use Philips. I'm saying Philips had a digital bulb, okay? I'm saying try to use digital bulbs with your electronic digital ballast, but the Philips one you can only use with their ballast. It's actually a double-ended bulb. It has two filaments at either end, and it does not screw in. It clamps in. So there's no way you can really even interchange them.
Is there another vendor that has the universal?
Yeah, you should check out the SunPulse. Yeah. That's a big question. He's asking what I think the trends are in growing and where it's headed. Is that pretty much it? Yeah. Okay. I don't know. I mean, it's like any industry. I don't mean to talk shit because it's just the way the world is and business is. But it is an industry, and that's where things get bogged down. Hydro shop owners carry certain things, certain name brands. They're there. They're always going to be there. And sometimes those guys in those shops don't necessarily even know what they're doing. It's kind of like being a doctor, I feel, when you're a gardener, you know? Like, you don't just come out of med school and you're like, dude, I'm a doctor for the rest of my life. Woohoo! Never have to study again. Like, after 4 years, everything those guys learn is passe. They're reading medical journals, going to seminars. So I think that is the future of this industry. I think what we're doing right here, I think this whole thing, I think, yeah, it's fun, it's cool. We go out there, we have a medicating area, we're fucking smoking out on U.S. soil, it's fucking awesome, you know, and we all just get into that, you know, and we look at that and we're like, woo, you know, but that really isn't what it's about, at least not for me. For me, it's about growing, and it is about the plant, at least until we get it legalized and we get all the funding that comes with that legalization to really learn about this plant. There's so much we haven't learned.
Nico Escondido from the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup in San Francisco. For Wiz Khalifa and Cannabis Carry, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Take it on one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.